Hello, hello, and welcome back to Organic Gardening for Beginners. My name is Jessica, the host of this show. Also from the blog Homegrown Food and Flowers, I'm a vendor at my local farmer's market, and I have a little Etsy shop. I've been in the garden for a very long time and love passing on everything I've learned over those years to help you kind of figure out your groove in this gardening world and learning some really awesome, sustainable, organic methods that make your gardening easier, more productive, and more fun. We have been chatting these last couple weeks about seed starting, direct sowing, getting your season kicked off with everything that you're going to grow. And so if you listened to last week's episode about direct sowing versus indoor seed starting, and you have decided, hey, I want to try starting some seeds indoors this year, then this episode is for you because I've got five tips that I think can make a really big difference in your success and health of your seedlings. I won't say it's a deal breaker if you don't follow these, that your seedlings won't be amazing, but I do think that it can help make them just that much healthier, that much stronger, so that once you get them out in the garden, they just take off and you don't miss a beat in your garden growth. So I want to start with number one, which I think is really a tip for anything to do in the gardening world, which is start with good soil, or in this case, a seed starting mix. Do not, and there's very rarely a time where I say do not do this, and what I'm going to say this time is do not take your soil or your dirt from outside and put it in a pot and try to start seeds in that. It may work, you may have things sprout, but it is really, really far from ideal. Not that your soil isn't amazing, but when you are starting in a seed tray or like a cell pack or even something like a Jiffy pot or a cow pot, something like that, you don't have the same structure and setup as when you are outside, when you've got microorganisms working back and forth with all of the surrounding dirt, when you've got worms going back and forth, aerating the soil, you run the risk of having more compaction in your little container as opposed to when you're out and about in the garden. And so starting with a seed starting mix can make a humongous difference in even just starting from the beginning with the germination or the sprouting of your seeds. And I know that you often hear the tip to have a sterile seed starting mix, meaning there are no weed seeds in there, there are no microorganisms in there. It's oftentimes been cooked up to a certain degree to kill anything in there, so that good or bad bacteria, microorganisms, all the little guys, that there's just nothing in there, and that way you can introduce the good bugs. And sometimes I follow this rule, but more often than not, I don't, because I like starting with living soil that has microorganisms in there. And you know what? Like I mentioned last week, maybe that means I have some fungus gnat eggs that will hatch, and I've got some fungus gnats in my indoor seed starting area. And I am honestly okay with that because I know that my soil is alive. And so I choose to start with something that has compost in it. And compost is very much alive. I mean, that's how you get compost. Things are decomposing, breaking down, getting eaten, getting pooped out by all the little bugs in there, whether it's a worm or something so small I can't even see it with the naked eye. And I am okay with that. So you kind of have those two camps where you can either start with a more alive type of soil or a more sterile type of soil. Totally up to you. What I do is I make my own soil so that I can kind of customize it to what I want. So usually this is a mix of coco coir, peat moss, vermiculite, perlite. I really like using worm compost or worm castings rather in my seed starting mix because it's just a nice gentle nutrition. I use a couple of trace minerals like azomite and rock phosphate and mycorrhiza to help with root development. So I make this really plant yummy seed starting mix that I have really, really good success with. If you are interested in doing that, it's very easy to do. You can start in small quantities and try it out and kind of figure out if this is the route you want to take, or you can just go the shortcut and buy a seed starting mix. Whether it's a sterile one or not, you'd have to shop around a little bit. Home Depot has their, you know, standard bag of seed starting mix. You can certainly get a bunch of different ones online, but starting with good soil is going to make a huge difference in your success. And one other thing I forgot to mention is it can also help with regulating the moisture of your trays or pots, whatever you're using, when you have these seed starting mixes, because if you have mediums in there like vermiculite or perlite, those two in particular, you can also use pumice, though, but the first two I mentioned, perlite and vermiculite, they are volcanic rocks that have been, or volcanic minerals, do they count as a mineral? I'd have to look that one up, but they have been processed in such a way that they can be used as amendments in the soil that either help with aeration or with water retention. And so by having a robust seed starting mix, as opposed to something just like garden dirt or garden soil, you have a higher likelihood of having a mix that will hold moisture at an ideal level rather than getting too dry too fast or staying too soggy for too long, neither of which are good for starting seeds. So if this is your first go around, grab a bag of seed starting mix. It's overpriced compared to making it yourself, but it can take out some of the guesswork of, you know, the ratios and which ingredients, and then you don't have a big bag of perlite sitting around and a big bag of vermiculite and a big bag of coco core, you know, if this isn't something that you decide to continue. So a couple tips there. All in one, really. Number two, start with smaller cells or seed trays and pot up as needed. So what I mean by this is think of a yogurt container. We'll go recycling route or reusing, I should say. Think of a yogurt container, like a quart yogurt container. It's really deep. It's relatively wide at the top, a lot of surface area. And let's say you're starting a tomato in there because tomatoes are best grown for maybe 10 weeks indoors, so they're going to get pretty large by the time you plant them out compared to something like a lettuce transplant. So when you have that big yogurt container, there's a lot of soil in there. So for one, it's going to use up a lot of your seed starting mix. But for two, and this is why I bring up starting with a small pot, it's also going to be harder to regulate the moisture in there because you will need to you'll need to add water more frequently to keep all of the soil wet. Soil dries out at the top first and then works its way down, and your itty bitty vulnerable seedling is at the top. So you're going to have to water frequently to keep that top layer moist enough to allow for germination. But as you keep adding this water to the top, the bottom is going to be continually wet. And that's not always ideal because then you waterlog your seed starting mix, which cuts out the oxygen, which makes it difficult for the roots from the seed, once it sprouts, to find little pockets of oxygen that it needs in the soil. So by starting with a smaller volume of soil, maybe a reused applesauce cup or a little single serve yogurt cup instead of a quart, when you water the top of the soil to keep the seed damp, the amount of water that's going down to the bottom of that cup is much, much less than in the quart container. And so the chance for that pot or the little cup, the smaller volume of soil, to dry out just a smidgen, not too much, but just to drain properly, the chances of that are much higher in the smaller container versus the large one. So if you have a small container, whether it's the applesauce cup or the little single serve yogurt one or half of a teepee roll, start with that. And then after a few weeks go by and your plants, your seedling is looking a little bit large, or maybe it's slowed down its growth and you think maybe it needs some fresh dirt or some fertilizer, then pot it up into a larger size. So maybe you go from the applesauce cup to a sour cream container or cottage cheese. I'm thinking of something halfway between. And then if it needs to get potted up again, maybe then you move into the quart yogurt container, or you start in that single serve yogurt cup and then you pot up to a red solo cup. And then if it needs more space, then do the yogurt container or half of a milk jug cut in half. All kinds of things that you can use, but hopefully you get the point of start small and move up as the plant needs it. It does add an extra step, obviously, but chances are you're going to have higher germination rates and just more success with the health of your seedlings if you do it this way. With all of these containers, if you reuse them, other than the teepee roll, make sure you're poking holes in the bottom so that that water can drain out. Otherwise, again, as you water the top to keep the seed moist or the newly sprouted seedling, there won't be anywhere for the water to drain from if you don't poke holes in the bottom. So stab it with a pair of scissors, You can heat up a nail and poke it through. You can use a drill, you know, whatever your tool is. Just make sure you've got some drainage holes in there. Alrighty, and then now that you've got your container and you've got your good soil, pay attention to the planting depth recommended on the seed packet. You have anywhere from itsy bitsy seeds that are a total pain in the butt to sow, like a speck of dust, all the way to giant ones like a zucchini or a green bean or like a nasturtium, something like that. And on the smaller size, you've got ones like yarrow, mint, snapdragons are all very tiny. And those that size can make a difference in how deep you plant the seed. So a little tiny speck of dust seed like a snapdragon, you don't want to bury it under really any soil. Whereas something like a nasturtium, because that seed itself is about a quarter inch in circumference or diameter, excuse me, you need to bury that under the soil for it to get to stay evenly moist and get the temperature that it needs to sprout. So on the back of your seed packet, and if it's not on the back of the seed packet, then certainly online in the seed catalog that you bought it from, pay attention to that depth and go by it. And you will sometimes see do not cover. I write that on my own seed packets that I sell. And I think that that's a scary thing to read because we're so used to burying seeds or covering them with at least a little bit of dirt, you know, historically when we worked in the garden. But there are some seeds that need that light to germinate. And so those ones, you literally just put it on the surface of your seed tray, water it in, and that's it. And watering it in means that not only are you going to moisten it, which is part of waking the seed up and triggering it to sprout, but you're also settling it into your seed starting mix so that it makes good contact. And once it starts to sprout, that root can go straight down into the soil and it's not wiggling around in space trying to find the soil to dig into. And when you do this, use a little spray bottle, like a mister bottle that's on the mistiest, finest setting. So that way you're not just washing your seeds away. I have had that happen on accident where I think that the spray bottle is on the fine setting and it's not. And it just washes my seeds away, or worse, it breaks up my soil block into half and then I have to start all over again. So check your little spray bottle first. You can use like a little, you know, again, Home Depot sells them for a few bucks, or like a little itsy bitsy, like the little bottles that people put their face wash spray to stuff in, whatever it takes to just get a nice fine spray until things have germinated. And that's just for the ones where you have to sow them on the surface. On the other hand, the seeds that you need to sow at a certain depth, look at the seed packet. It's going to tell you most common is a quarter inch. Some seeds like peas or sweet peas, they like to be put down to about half an inch. And some I even do a little bit closer to an inch, like some of my peas, especially if the soil is already a little bit warm because they prefer cooler soil to germinate. So just check the back of your packet and go according to those instructions, even if it feels weird to not cover it. Fourth tip is your light. So once your seeds have sprouted, they are immediately going to need light. Otherwise, you run the risk of having what are called leggy seedlings. And this happens when the seeds have sprouted and the seedling has its first two leaves. These are like their baby leaves, kind of like we have baby teeth. And those leaves need to find light in order to photosynthesize and make food. And so they're going to stretch and reach for the nearest light source. And if that light source isn't close enough, then they're going to reach unusually long and harmfully long, which will result in this really long, thin stem. And you might have this happen and look at it and say, oh my gosh, this is awesome. It's growing so fast. It's so tall already. Way to go, me. Unfortunately, this is not ideal because you then have a really weak stem on your seedling that makes it way more vulnerable to falling over in a heavy rain, to just breaking as you're handling it. And it's really not ideal. You want stocky, dark green, or at least medium green seedlings coming up because that's a good sign that they're getting the light and then the food that they need. So two tips here. If you have leggy seedlings, maybe you've already started something indoors and you're thinking, oh crap, that sounds like me. It's not a death sentence for most of your seedlings. If you have leggy seeds where they are we'll say an inch between the soil and those two baby leaves. Chances are that means they're leggy. What you can do is repot them into a larger container and bury the stem down into the soil so that you only have maybe a quarter to half an inch showing above the soil. And typically that will work. Your plant will continue to grow, develop its roots, all that good stuff. Sometimes it doesn't work. I find that if I've tried that, I mean, granted, I don't have leggy seedlings too long, so it's been a while, but I have had some that just didn't make it. They didn't like the moisture around the stem and just really didn't thrive. And so those ones I just tossed in the compost and I started again. So if you have leggy seedlings, try that. But if you haven't started yet or you're, you know, still thinking about this, I'm not a huge fan of the instruction of plant this and put it in your bright window and it'll get the light that it needs. I don't honestly find that that is usually the best situation for your seedlings. So as you've heard me recommend before, I would highly, highly recommend investing in a shop light. And by invest, I mean, like, you can find $20 ones, you can find $60 ones. It depends on how many bulbs they are. And I wouldn't even pay attention to anything about lumens or spectrum or temperature or any of that, because you really don't need it if you're just using these lights for seed starting. If you're trying to grow hydroponically or grow indoors all year round, then you need to pay attention to it. But for the month or 6 weeks or 8 weeks that you have seedlings indoors, it honestly doesn't matter. And I say this with the last 15 years worth of experience starting seeds indoors. So it's not my first rodeo. I love starting seeds. I have never bought a fancy grow light. I just had to refresh my stash because I have more seedlings going this year. I went to Home Depot. I got a shop light that cost $60, which is so much more expensive than they used to be, but it's worth it. And it has four bulbs on it, so it's nice and wide. And that's all I can tell you about it, because I honestly did not pay attention to how many watts, lumens, temperature, spectrum, any of that, because it doesn't matter. So if you've been feeling analysis paralysis about your light setup, just let it go. Be like Elsa and just let it go and just go find whatever's in your budget or whatever looks like it will fit the space you have. You can buy shop lights in 2, 3, and 4 foot lengths, depending on what kind of a shelf you're using or a tabletop or counter or whatever, and just run with it. I do recommend putting your light about 2 to 3 inches above your seed tray, which can seem really, really close. But these days, most bulbs are LED. And even if they're not, it's not going to get so hot that it'll burn your plants. You don't want the seedling growing up to touch the light. Like, give it that 2, 3 inches, because that's going to encourage growth upwards if it's, you know, trying to reach the light source. And then keep moving it up as your plant grows. Sometimes I wish I had a YouTube channel so that I could show you guys exactly what I'm talking about. I think what I'm going to do is put a link in the show notes to a couple of Instagram posts that I've put in the past, and I might even put up one fresh now so that you guys can see it, of my seed setup, so that you can see the lights that I've got and how close they are and just kind of in general what I'm doing. Hopefully that will help. And I think I can do that, like pin a specific post to the show notes. So yeah, use the window if you absolutely have to, the brightest one you've got. But if you can put $20 towards a little shop light, I would definitely recommend doing that. And then lastly, we are at the end of the progression of your seed starting journey here. We started with our soil and our small trays, and we planted it properly. We got them light right away. And so now it's time to set them out into the garden. And the biggest difference in seedlings that are going to make it and those that aren't is a process called hardening off. And what that means is you need to slowly introduce your protected, babied, spoiled seedling out into the big bad elements outside. So presumably they've been growing in your house where it is relatively constant temperature, no wind, this nice shop light that gives it 16 hours of sunlight a day, even Steven, you know, no variance, no cloudy days. And now you're going to throw it out to the elements where it might be windy, it might be cold at night still, maybe it's cloudy, maybe it's really, really bright and warm. And if you just go from that protected situation into the elements, your plant can, your seedling can very easily go into either what's called transplant shock, where it just kind of sits there for a couple weeks and acclimates out in the field or out in your garden, meaning it's not growing for 2 weeks, it's stressed out, it's more vulnerable to pests, more vulnerable to disease because stressed plants are more vulnerable, or it'll just die because the heat was too much and it cooked it, or the cold was too much and it froze, but it won't make it. And none of those are ideal situations, especially the dying part, because you just spent a month babying this thing inside and now you have to start over again or go buy a seedling. So what you want to do is to harden off your seedlings. You want to build in 4 to 7 days before you plan to put this thing out in your garden. And on the first day, you need to find preferably a shady, somewhat protected spot. So don't take your flat of seeds out and go put it in the middle of your backyard where there are no trees to protect it, no wind blocks. It's just, you know, full on sun, and then say, cool, I'm hardening it off. It's still in the tray. That's not really any better than putting it straight into the garden under those circumstances as either. So find a shady spot somewhere where the temperature difference isn't going to be as extreme. Maybe there's a nice wind block so that they're not just getting pummeled by the wind, and put them in this protected spot for a couple of hours on the first day. And then you're going to take it back inside to its nice little protected environment. And then the next day you're going to take it back out, and you can either put it back in that same protected spot, or you can put it somewhere where it's maybe getting a little bit of dappled shade or a little bit less wind protection. And you're going to leave it there for a few hours, and then you're going to take it back in. And basically you're going to follow this pattern of a little bit more exposure each day to a little bit of harsher elements. So you might go from total shade to dappled shade to an hour or two of morning sun and then shade to 3 or 4 hours of morning sun and then shade. And I know as I'm saying this, this sounds like a total pain in the butt of like, really, Jess, I have to move my seeds in and out for a week. You do. You can shave this down to like 4 days if you are planting out, you know, into nice May springtime weather. But if you are, you know, starting your lettuce indoors right now and you're going to put it out in the beginning of March when it might still drop down to 35 degrees at night, or you have a unusually warm day where it's 60 degrees, you do need to harden them off in order to give them the best chance of success. And it's totally worth it, in my opinion, because as I mentioned before, you spend all this time growing it, and this is going to give you a jump on your harvest as opposed to going and direct sowing your lettuce seeds out in the garden. So build in the time. If you're looking at your seed packet and it says, you know, start indoors 4 to 6 weeks before your last frost, then you can mentally add on a week of that hardening off period. So say you want you're starting zinnias indoors and they need 4 to 6 weeks before frost to grow inside before you transplant them out. And you want to put them out right at after the risk of your last frost has passed. We'll use May 1st because that's a nice easy date. So instead of starting your seeds April 1st to give it 4 weeks to grow inside, maybe you start them the last week of March, grow them out for 4 weeks, and then that last week of April, first day or two of May, that's all part of the hardening off process, and then you transplant it out May 1st, 2nd, 3rd, somewhere in there, you know, depending on what your frost is actually doing. So hardening off is a really easy process. It's also really easy to skip, where you look at your seed trays and think, oh man, I should have planted these last week. They are too big, or they're looking sad and they need some new fertility, some new soil to stretch their roots out into. I'm just going to chuck them out there and hope for the best. I would be lying if I said I've never done it, because I totally have. I've been there. But if you can avoid it, do, because it's just going to make the transition way, way easier. It's going to make you feel better about your seed starting success. And it just makes for a better start to your season. Those are my five tips. Couldn't even get that out without stumbling. My five tips for indoor seed starting. I love the seed starting process. It's one of my absolute favorite parts of the whole process and yearly cycle. It's so, I've again mentioned this before, it's so inspiring to see this tiny little tomato seed or tiny little snapdragon seed and know all the different harvests that you're going to get from it, whether it's 30 pounds of tomatoes or 10 tall, beautiful stems of snapdragon flowers. It's just so much fun. And all seeds are different. There's so many varieties. I think it's such a cool part. I buy my seedlings too, you know, if I've fallen behind or I see something cool. So I'm not a seed starting purist, but I do really, really enjoy that process. And I'm bringing a ton of seedlings to my farmer's market booth coming up here in the next couple months. And I cannot wait to share them with people. All right, my friends, that is it for this week. Next week, we will continue on, I believe, unless I change my mind. We're going to be talking about growing your garden beds throughout the season and how to kind of take a overview perspective of the year, of the spring garden into the summer garden, into the fall garden, and looping back around into the springtime. And if that doesn't show up next week, then it will the week after. So I will get that one out to you guys. All right, talk to you later. Bye.